Hey, welcome back to This Week on Channel 9. I'm Dan Fernandez.
I'm Charles.
Charles!
How are you doing, man?
Yeah!
Long time
to see. Happy to have you on, yeah.
It's good. And where is this guy?
So we got some big news. We have the biggest release Visual Studios ever had, and that's boom, next slide. Yes, Paxton Caden Geller.
Nice.
Yes, congratulations to Brian and
Absolutely.
Elisa.
Absolutely, great job.
For their newborn baby. You can see, super cute there.
Absolutely.
Clearly, Keller is the dad.
Yep.
I think the nice thing, too, is he came right on time. So actually on his due date, which was Brian's birthday. So now
wow.
they actually share birthdays.
Incredible.
So now we haven't been able to get a picture of Brian, but we had an artist do a rendition. So this is basically what we think Brian looks like from the hospital. So best of luck to Brian. And we love him and can't wait to have you back. And congratulations on the baby.
Absolutely, to all around, man, all around.
So we do have real news, too.
We do have real news.
So, Charles, what is this one?
So, DirectX game templates, basically, it's a project, a learning project that has been created for people to go ahead and download this extension to Visual Studio 2013, create a new DirectX game app, and then go ahead and look and see how they've actually coded to learn. And one of the things I think to step back about the DirectX kind of stuff. So basically, if you haven't written DirectX before, try this out. It abstracts a lot of stuff away from you, and more importantly though, it shows you how to program in DirectX by going through the CPP files. And the one thing I wanted to touch on was you'll notice that all of the platform specific stuff is located in app.cpp. And not in the helper functions, in the helper files, excuse
okay.
me. And that means you could conceivably take this code and use it on a desktop app.
Boom.
It doesn't just have to be for
Windows Store.
Not Metro, exactly. So anyway, they're doing a lot of work around DirectX right now. It's the de facto way, the default way to write high performance games on Windows. And they're doing a lot of work. If we go to the next slide, you can see there's even more information you can get. There's actually a really good virtual academy session that was done introducing you to C++ and DirectX. So that's going to be on Channel 9. Watch that.
So we got the template. This is the training.
Yeah.
You get the template, show you how to do sort of the boilerplate C++.
Yes.
The point is, if you're looking to get into DX gaming, this is a great place to start.
Great place to
start.
And
everything's free.
Everything's free.
Love it. So what is this one? Who do we know here?
Well, we know the great Kate Gregory. I love the fact that we're starting off with so much C++. I mean, Greg Duncan's got it going on.
He knows, oh God, Charles is on. I actually have to cover C++ now. Yeah. Oh, geez. It's
so,
like when Keller's on. We don't have to cover ALM. I feel like three times
man.
Lighter.
Yeah, there's no ALM this time. But the cool thing about, I want to just make a call out. Dr. Sneath, I know you're out there. He runs the Microsoft Virtual Academy. He runs that group now. They've seen
sure.
Dr. Sneath before. And I've had many conversations with him over the years about where the hell is the C++ content, dude? And now it's there. And what a great way to come out on MVA with Kate Gregory and Jane McNellis, you know, spending 8 hours geeking out on C++ from beginning to STL. So congratulations and thank you, Tim, for doing that.
Yeah, it's fundamentals, which is great. You know, so much of the feedback that we have, you know, we've been doing Absolute Beginners with Bob Tabor for a long time.
Yes, you have.
Bob isn't a C++ developer. People said, I love this series.
Mm-hmm.
For my job, I have to do C++.
Mm-hmm.
Can you give me something? Because every time I look as a want to start coding C++,
mm-hmm.
it starts at level 300.
Exactly.
So having something that covers the fundamentals is a big gap, and I'm really glad they're doing this.
Absolutely. And Kate actually does it on Pluralsight. An absolute beginner's guide to learning how to program,
mm-hmm.
but using C++. So if you don't program and you want to learn to program and you want to learn to program by using C++, check out Kate's excellent Pluralsight
okay.
series.
Okay, well I thought this one was fundamentals too, is it not?
This is a little fast-paced, right?
Okay, got it.
So you should know how to program.
Okay.
Right? They're not going to go through and tell you what a for loop is and what a data structure is. I mean, these are things you need to understand.
Okay.
All right.
All right, so next story here is VS4, a great find by Greg Duncan, I should say, as well. So a couple things that I really like about this one. One is what's called rainbow parentheses. Mm-hmm. So rainbow parentheses basically means, you know, I'm going to have multiple lines. I have the inner, the outer, and they're all matched. So I know from a color perspective yep. where the matching begin and end parens and begin and end brackets are. And there's a number of different features here as well. So namespace prefixes, XML closing tags. It's one of those small things. Very cool things. And me personally, I've been running productivity power tools and Web Essentials, and those are kind of like my two sure. Must-have downloads. And I love like little editor enhancements. It's the smallest things that really add up to the most value.
Absolutely,
love it.
.NET
Fiddle.
Cool. So, I mean, you actually, I know you know about this because you tried to break it.
Yes.
How did you try that? What did you
so,
do?
So what this is you go to a web page. It's got a top frame. Is a coding mm-hmm. Page. It actually has things like IntelliSense. I added system.collections.generic, did a list string, goes new list string, did a while true, and then built an array of 500,000 strings using random numbers, and then sorted them and everything else. And the second I tried to run it, I was like, okay, I wonder what's actually going to happen. And the result is your app takes too much memory.
Great.
Doesn't even execute. So they're doing some smart stuff to detect in case you were trying to break them.
Sure.
But this is cool, especially if you say have a small snippet to share. You're kind of playing around, and I love this stuff. And obviously, we've done investments similar to this with Visual Studio codename Monaco. Got to put the air quotes because that's a code name.
Yep.
Where we have basically an in-browser editor with IntelliSense, and that's supports but languages that, like JavaScript, CSS,
does.
And
okay.
and
but not C Sharp.
I don't think C Sharp.
Yeah.
So
this
very
is
cool
like
stuff.
JS Fiddle, but it's .NET Fiddle. JS Fiddle is amazing for your JavaScripters out there. This is an equivalent thing. You can share stuff. You can collaborate with people. It's quite
cool.
Yeah,
and it's super easy to do the both run and share.
Great.
So what's our next one?
Well, speaking of video tutorials, definitely good catch on this one. A shout out to the New Boston people. I think it's actually New Boston started off with one person, and I believe now he actually has a couple of employees. But great job on lots and lots of training covering very, very different programming languages, from PHP to C++.
I saw some Java
C-sharp,
game development.
Absolutely. Objective-C.
jQuery.
Great job, man. 65 videos on Objective-C, 200 on C-sharp, 73 on C++. You can go down the list. Ruby, Python, PHP, Visual Basic, Java, of course.
Awesome.
Good job, man.
Love it. All right. So this is a cool story about 154 million records on Azure Table Storage.
Hmm.
This gentleman basically walks through having, Troy Hunt, I should say, walks through having this data, was going to add it into a SQL Server, but the size of the data made it so large that the cost per month, I think it was like $167 to do SQL. And it's like, okay, well, what about table storage? He actually walks through all the different things in terms of loading, in terms of the actual data process, using some of the Server Explorer tools. Very cool data explorer tools, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool sort of walkthrough in case you're like, hey, so what do you do when you have that much data? And even things like, hey, how long does it take to load 94,000 records a second, that kind of throughput output. So
sure.
If you're looking to do Azure Table Storage and kind of a walkthrough, this is a great example.
Excellent. And he created that new thing called Have I Been Owned or Pwned. How do you pronounce that?
Pwned?
Pwned.
Pwned.
So you've been hacked, right? All right.
.NET
and everything.
Yes. ADO.NET Entity Framework 6. So Entity Framework is very cool, and it's got a number of new features. Obviously, one of the big ones is connection resiliency.
Mm.
So here's the problem. What do you do when SQL Azure goes down or has a little blip, right, for a couple seconds? We've actually built providers that can say, if you hit SQL Server and it's down, do retry logic. And that's built into the Entity Framework. You can either build your own or use our own SQL Azure
Excellent.
Provider with smart defaults that you can, of course, customize. So that way, hey, it's gone for half a second and it's now back up. Our page can keep working as opposed to start throwing an exception and maybe it starts showing 30 exceptions and then you can't even handle because the call stack is too big and you end up breaking yourself. Right.
Okay.
So what are the things that you can do to, rather than have those exceptions, do smart retry logic as well?
Right.
That's just one example, and there's a ton of stuff. If you want to learn about code first, you want to learn about their designers, about how to migrate changes, everything else, this is the one place for ADO Entity Framework.
Great.
Gadgeteer book.
Where's Clint?
I know. Deported. So sorry.
So what is this, man?
So you tell me.
So I'm not really a gadgeteer myself, and I don't use Visual Basic, but I would imagine you could use C#, right? We should just be about .NET.
Yeah, I mean, so basically,
you tell me, man. You're a tinkerer.
This is a book about .NET Gadgeteer, and it is a Visual Basic book. But the idea is you have one of those Gadgeteer things, and it has a bunch of effectively a kit that we send to be able to do model things. So, for example, I want to be able to do hardware. I have basic input ports and output ports.
Cool.
Say, for example, to control a light. There's a Wi-Fi thing to receive data, to send data, and certain sensors, a camera. I have the picture from the camera, maybe be sent on Wi-Fi on an interval, or ask the picture to be taken. So a number of cool scenarios where you have this base set of hardware and you want to be able to program it.
Got it. So interesting, it's from Microsoft Research.
Yeah.
And those are also, actually Microsoft Research isn't the group behind Small Basic. Remember Small Basic?
Yeah, that was guy, one unfortunately dude. Left the company.
Yeah, that would be a really, really cool way to learn how to program and
then
control devices.
And Gadgeteer, to be fair, is Colin Miller. I think this book is Microsoft Research.
Right on. Hey, good work.
Yes. Which brings us to Picks of the Week.
Wow, already?
I know.
Man.
So
I need this. All right.
Yeah, my Pick of the Week. This would be hilarious if we actually had the work version of this. This would be great. Which is basically, connect Hears You Swear in NBA 2014, you'll be penalized. Hmm. So imagine you're playing, you go hit your three-pointer, it knocks off, and you start screaming, right? Or somebody steals it from you. You start screaming, cursing. All of a sudden, you will get a technical foul due to bad language.
Wow.
So it's actually monitoring what you're saying, and the ref will go up and give you a foul based on your language. That's hilarious.
That is hilarious, but I don't know, man. I don't know.
You should be able to turn that
off. Mind your own business, Connect.
But that's hilarious.
No, it is. It's excellent. But it wouldn't. What happens if you're not playing a game? I mean, you could use it to basically control how people talk to the Xbox. Like, if something's blocked or something in the UI, and you said, beep, right? What would it do? Right on, man.
Experiments for
so
home.
So now we have a picture of a title. Oh,
Pick
that's
of
right.
the week.
Oh,
citation
yeah.
Citation needed.
So this is really, really cool. You're a programmer, obviously, out there watching this. We've all had the debate of how you index into an array, right? So zero or one base.
I want to get the first element. I type in
zero or
array
one.
Array zero or
array zero.
One?
So the question behind this incredible blog post, for everybody out there, read the whole thing. Click on the links that are inside of his blog post. And also make sure you read the comments.
Okay.
Because there's some really excellent stuff in there. But the fact of the matter is the whole zero or one thing is both a technical problem, historical technical problem in terms of why zero was ever used in the first place, and that was to save time in compilation on an IBM something, 7094 or whatever.
Really?
One of those old machines, yes.
So a
that was the whole reason.
Model. Oh God, that's terrible.
That was the whole reason, and then that was the technical reason.
Yeah.
And the thing I think that's wonderful about this article is that, number one, I like his style of writing and the passion.
Okay.
And it's very smart. And in some sense, it's also sort of a critique of how programmers and this industry and this world that we live in, we're very resistant to change. And we also tend to sort of snowball on information we think is right because we heard it and have accepted it in practice. But we haven't really actually gone back and done the due diligence to understand, now why is it zero? Why would we ever index in an array zero? Some people say it's because of math, some people blah, blah, blah. There's obviously good reasons behind it, but they're social, not just technical.
So what I would say is,
today,
as a developer, I would respond like, I agree with all this stuff, especially if it was a dumb idea. The one thing that I don't like is when people are inconsistent for no reason.
Okay.
Right? So like, somebody, you know, you can imagine the .NET framework where certain teams would do start-stop for methods, and then others decide to do begin-finish or begin-end.
Yeah.
And it's like, that doesn't make any, why are you being inconsistent for no reason? And
true.
I think developers definitely hate that. You gotta have a reason to be
sure.
Inconsistent.
But I mean, the interesting thing about the 0-1, and there's so much sort of interesting metaphor in there anyway. But
typewriter, okay.
The cool thing about 0-1 also is that in mathematics, it makes sense to talk about zero distance from the beginning of something. That makes sense. But it doesn't necessarily...
program, I'm looking at a list. Hey, who's the first kid that's going to be picked for softball? Oh, number 0.
Yeah.
Number 0 is the first.
Yeah, but
that makes no sense.
But hey, then you're hanging out with your friends. Hey, honey, could I have the number 0 one? Right?
Yeah.
Hey, you want the first
one?
Here, have the first one. Have the 0th one.
Oh, there's 3 kids. I want to get the second one. Oh, the second one is number 1.
Exactly. Of course. Everyone knows that.
Of course.
Number 2 is 1, dude. 0 is 1, man.
Yeah, length minus 1.
That's what it all means.
Exactly.
Actually, I'd like to leave all of these wonderful people out there with a question.
Question.
What is a side effect of itself?
A side effect
of itself. What would you call that? What is that?
Give an example.
I can't. Well, I can't.
Maybe that's a side effect.
Interesting. So, but I think that I was thinking about that because I was thinking about quality.
Okay.
And when I was thinking about quality, I was thinking about quality as a property of any number of things, and I started thinking about what is a side effect of itself. Could that be the definition of something that we've tried to explain for years around here with convoluted way? You're the smart people out there, man.
Answer
what is
the
side effect of itself?
Side effect of
Give
itself.
An example of it.
We're given homework.
We are.
Side effect of itself. And kudos to Brian and Elisa.
Brian, congratulations.
And
Lisa.
Thank you, Charles, again.
Great to see you again, man.
Awesome. Thanks again. We'll see you next time.